and welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We are here celebrating the season that really just passed. We're celebrating Junkanoo. Participants took time out of this crazy season to come in. Carlos Bain, who is a Junkanooer, but is also, and the two really, we talked about that before the break, it's kind of shouldn't really be mutually exclusive, right? An artist and a Junkanooer, but he has a show at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas right now called Second to None, where he's displaying what I just learned he's calling his fringe paintings. So they are paintings, but not made with paint. They're made with the fringing. So they're, but I like that, fringe painting. So they're made of fringe. They're really beautiful. So we really encourage people to come to the National Art Gallery. We're open. We're always open over the holidays. We're open Tuesday to Saturday for a fee, but on Sunday we're open from noon to five, and it is always free. So you can come to the National Art Gallery free on Sundays. You could see Carlos Bain's show in the project space downstairs. You could see Hard Mouth, which is our show of the permanent exhibition, and that show some of the old classics like Brent Malone and Amos Ferguson and people like that. And then upstairs we have the National Exhibition, which is younger artists, well, and older artists too, but like a little bit more cutting edge. But so there's a lot of variety there, which I think speaks to how creative we are as people. Like, we don't just do one thing. We're not one-dimensional. And I think it's something we struggle with at the NGB too, is to show our beauty and all of its manifestations. And there's so much Bahamian creativity in so many different ways. And we also have Jay Comint here, who for many years was an art dealer, still is dealing art, but also is really committed to Junkanoo and is part of the Genesis Junkanoo group. Tell me a little bit about the birth of Genesis.
When I came in, I met Carlos there, so yeah, he might be able to tell you a little more. But I think what it is that essentially the groups get too large. Yeah. And when they get a little bit too large, people need to break off to sort of spread their wings.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
there's some people that sort of spread their wings, needed to spread their wings in Genesis. And what they did was then find like-minded people, mm-hmm, who were interested in trying to start something new, because mm-hmm, there hadn't been a group of that size been created in 25 years.
Probably since, I guess, One Family were the last
One Family
major split.
And Roots, that, since them. So there hadn't been a group that had that serious of intentions as Genesis had.
But I think also what was interesting about Genesis was it was sort of, from my understanding, was that it was sort of founded with this idea of talking about art as part of it, as it being really like an art practice as much as it is a Junkanoo practice. And a lot of people that are involved in Genesis are, you know, consider themselves artists. Is that something that was kind of really like on your mind?
That's a part of it. Another thing that drew me to Genesis was something that we spoke about earlier on the show, was that a lot of persons didn't know how to get involved in Junkanoo. And Genesis was a young group with young minds, and mm-hmm, they created like a registration drive, you know, mm-hmm, and open it up to the public, mm-hmm, and international.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's true, a lot of people don't know how to. Right. It seems like it's, you got to be from that neighborhood, or you've got to know someone, right, or you've got to have grown up with it. And even if you're interested, you kind of don't really know, like, who should I talk to? Who should I?
Right. Yeah. So when I noticed that they open up a registration drive, then I say, you know what, this group is about some difference,
mm-hmm,
you know, and I'd like the ideas that were flowing. And like Jay said, I met Jay through Genesis. So sometime, I think everything in life is calculated. You don't meet persons just by chance. You know, you'll never know why you met this person. You might find it out 5, 10, 15 years later, but then that's how it is. And at that time, I was the design team chairman at the, and Jay was a part of the design team, and he threw some ideas, and all of us just started getting our minds flowing and going. And it was a great experience, you know, and it's a young group, young talent. They haven't won a parade as yet, but
yeah, but
in
you've
short
done.
Time,
but you've done some pretty. I think you've been noticed.
Yes, because it, to Genesis also, it wasn't only about the competition. They were doing some things in the community, giving breakfast and all kind of haircuts on parks and things. So it was not only about Bay Street. It was more bigger than Bay, you know, and that's what would grab my heart a bit too, mm-hmm, to the group. So, I mean, in the season, the competition is getting better. The costumes are getting better. I'm watching right now some improvement in all aspects, in all areas of the group. So in the near future, the group will be a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, I mean, our brass leader is 23.
Yeah?
He's 23. And he looked to me like the oldest fella in the whole thing. So, you know, you're talking about, like, you know, just a really young, some of the young guys who are trying. And it's exciting, but it's a process you have to go through. I mean, you know, because all these big groups try and do, they're not going to just hand anything to you. You have to fight and continue to work hard to get the respect that you need, that you want. And I think it's a course of time. Genesis, like he says, will be around as a force to reckon with on Boxing Day and New Year's. And I just to go back a second, because I wanted to talk just very briefly about Shirley Street and the museum and the experience that people have. And in an environment where we don't have a lot of museums, really, and I'm blessed. I grew up in New York. There's a Museum of Natural History and all these different things. Junkanoo is the de facto Museum of Natural History. It's the de facto anthropology of the world. So when a group brings out whatever it is, from fairy tales to things about science or spiritual things like religious themes, or China, or wherever in the world they're doing, Latin America for us this year, that is a way for children to learn.
Yeah, that's for true. You do, and I think also that's something that's, you know, aside from the actual parade where you learn from that, right? Or maybe if you don't learn immediately, your interest is sparked on something, right? Mm. So, you know, they're like, oh, Brazil, that looks interesting. Let me go read some more. The people in the – and I think that's something the audience doesn't understand, is the amount of research and study that happens in the shacks, right, is amazing. And so I think, you know, that's also kind of a whole part of the process that is, you know, lost on many people. Would there be a way to, I mean, again, this is spitballing. You're doing all that research. Could you bring in, like, kids from the neighborhood? I mean, I know you're also busy, like, building your costumes, but the knowledge that you're building through the research and through making the costumes can be shared, like, with the immediate community. Would that be something that's possible if, like, you got other people in? But again, then the secret would be out about your costumes, wouldn't it?
And I think the secret of Junkanoo has been killing Junkanoo in a way, you know. But some kids, luckily, to get involved by living in the neighborhood, like you said, or this guy knowing this guy, and he have a kid that wants to be involved or something like that, some kind of connection that keeps it going. But there has to be another way. The museum, a lot of research goes down in selecting themes. Mm-hmm. That a lot of persons don't understand. Like, for example, I was a part of the planning for the As I Knew Him with the late Jackson Burnside. And we had to actually sit with his wife to find out about his lifestyle, what he liked, was his favorite food, and
all things
where all he traveled, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah, because exactly, it was about his life, right? It wasn't just about his art, it was about his life, yeah.
And we had to try to display his whole lifestyle in a presentation on Bay Street, you know. So, and we got a lot of feedback, like, oh, I didn't know Jackson liked Wild Hog, and I didn't know he traveled to this. And so it showed that a lot of persons sometimes do be paying attention, relating to the theme that we present. A lot of persons learn a lot about these countries because of Junkanoo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we bring China, we start to display the dragon dog, the dragon dance, like what they do. Because Junkanoo is a moving presentation, and it's really displaying, as actors, we get into character just to portray that theme, you know. So sometimes it's mind transitioning to say, hey, now I have to become a Chinese, even though I'm a Bahamian. Time to get in China mood. So it comes with a lot of practice, research, and that's another art form, you know.
It is, because I think, you know, we quite often talk to people that have traveled, and it's like we would say, you know, wouldn't it be great if everybody could travel to get another perspective? Because it does change, very often changes the way you look at things when you look at things from a different perspective. But for people that can't travel, because we all know how expensive that is, it's a really interesting idea that you have to kind of put yourself into the role of another culture, another person. So it's kind of like being an actor as well, right? Where you have to, you know, you sort of forget that part about the performance as well. It's not just the costume, but it's a performance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's part of the nature of it is to try to, and at least sometimes I find myself in a shack trying to talk to somebody who's carrying a costume and trying to find what is the spirit of that costume, so that when they go out and they are rushing this costume, they feel that, like he says, you could become something else, which is part of what wearing a mask is and part of what Junkanoo really is. So I think for me, as I see it, it's really quite exciting. And one thing I've learned now that I've actually done Junkanoo from a group side, when you sit there and watch it, it seems long and drawn out. Like, oh, God, where's the next group? And you need, like, binoculars to see when they come
in.
And
that is a little bit of the problem.
But when you're in the group, time just move. And you're like, oh, wait a second. All this year we worked on to be on Bay Street, we only allowed to be on Bay Street for 45 minutes? Oh, my God, you got to move. And, like, your perspective just totally changes when you're on the road. I mean, time just moves like this. When you're sitting in the seats, time just moves like, you know, slow.
It does. It's just, what's the gaps mostly? It's not once the group is there. I mean, obviously, there's still the problem with the sound. I feel like that's one of the biggest issues that Junkanoo has to solve, is that you got to be able to hear the music when you see the dancers. It just doesn't, whether they have microphones hanging down the way and it's just, you just get it through speakers.
We actually tried that one year at Labor Day where they, I think, well, maybe Owen had got some guys to come in and set up some mics by the thing and put it up to the front.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that there was a lag. So it wasn't like it was live. So you ended up hearing like a lag. It just didn't.
Yeah. But there's got to be, I mean, it's 21st century, man. We do brain surgery. We've got to be able to figure out sound and Junkanoo.
Yeah,
you know, because I think that's one of the problems, is that obviously, like, you get, as a spectator, you get fired up by the sound, and it's great to see the costumes, but when they're coming along, you're kind of, with the big groups, you're like being sort of critical. You're like, you're there in your seat, like, yeah, that's nice, and look at them, and look at her. And then when the music comes, that's when you get the spirit, right? And then it stops again, and then you calm down, then you sit there, and you maybe go to get some souse, and you come back again, and then you get fired up again. So it's this up, down feeling, and it would be great to just be able to kind of keep that up feeling, you know? And I think the music is the key.
I think amplifying Bay Street would be better in the near future. And I hope that future soon come. Because a lot of these guys that are part of the music section, they practice all these fanfares and things like that to go along with the theme. So we bring in jungle, they play in the jungle. The issue with that is where they're playing it would be called the hole. Judges are not allowed, and the fans can't really hear. So the only persons that can appreciate the fanfare would be the brass that's playing it, or persons who in the hole with them.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes unnoticed, and it goes like purposeless for as it relates to scoring for music, because no one hears that part of Junkanoo, and no one sees that point. You know, so amplifying Bay Street would be, I think, an evolution of Junkanoo.
Yeah, and it would really help for the audience to stay engaged and to stay excited in those kind of moments where there's, you know, there's a bit of a space. And the other thing, too, actually, speaking of judges, because you said the judges aren't there. Man, when you went and bought your tickets for Rawson Square and then you can't see nothing because all you can see is the back of a bunch of judges and they stand with their back to you and you cannot see anything.
Yeah. My recommendation, get at least third row or higher.
Yeah, you do have to get there. But even so, even if you're higher, it's like, you know, I know you have to see it too, but like we all have to see it as well. So, and there's specifically like the two main groups that will go unnamed, but we know who they are because it seems like suddenly like all the friends and family have jackets too. I don't know, but and you don't see anything. And you can't, and also they're kind of around the costumes, and you can't sometimes even if you're further up, they're like blocking the view. So I don't know how. You've been a judge.
I've been a judge and I've been a marshal, and I've tried to be invisible as best as I can. But there are times when your group is moving and you can't stand in the middle where the group is, so you have to stand to the side, and you sort of try to maneuver around a little bit or duck once in a while. But you know, it's all I can say is when the group comes, stand.
I know, but even when you stand anyway. So, but again, like, it might be more spreading the judges out. I mean, you're speaking to an area where the judges aren't there, and there's something of value happening, right? So maybe some of the judges should be in the hole, or should be dispersed along. I don't know.
Well, I think that's a part of the judges' rule. I don't think they're allowed in the hole. Mm-hmm. I think the first area of judging is the penalty zone.
Okay.
And that's where the judges really start.
Yeah,
you know, they making sure that all the groups meet the criteria.
Sure, and they're hitting the line at the right time. And,
but in the hole is where a lot of work is being displayed.
Mm-hmm.
But that goes unnoticed. And I don't know. I don't know if I would appreciate if the judges end up in the back there, because a lot of hidden things just go down in the back there, you know.
So we'll take that one off. Just because you said there was stuff happening there that wasn't,
you know, Bay Street, I would agree to.
You
know, because that would keep all the spectators engaged in the parade, and they wouldn't feel so long and drawn out.
And something else I noticed last year was that depending who your kind of MC was, you know, that also changed the way your group was perceived, right?
Yes.
And you know, if you have a good guy who's like getting the crowd fired up you know, and is talking, keeping you engaged, but it's also somehow it seems like you've worked on all those costumes, you've done all the dancing, you know, exercises and planning, and the brass have been practicing all year, and basically it's not make or break on that one guy. But if you have a guy who's not a great MC and he doesn't have the crowd pumped up, you do perceive the group in a different way when it lands there. That's because you can't hear the music, right? So it goes back to that same problem.
One of the things we talked about from last year, which was to make sure that our MC was not only going to be good, but was also going to be working within the context of our theme. So, you know, you could have an MC who is simply being a DJ, and, you know, you can go to any club and hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But we our idea was to try and make sure that they were integral to what the theme was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it worked okay. But, you know, to your point, I agree with you.
It's become like an important role, which just kind of grew out of this fact of that the groups are so big and you have that big hole and... You know, so anyhow, we've only got 2 minutes left. Last thing.
See, the importance of that is because a lot of the judges are really hyped up on crowd response.
Yeah.
So if you can get the crowd to react to whatever the MC is, that will help give you some good scores.
Sure.
But if the environment is quiet and you can hear crickets and things like that, don't be expecting too much, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the MC is really play an intricate part of Jonkin Walter too.
So we're going to see. I mean, again, this show is airing on January 2nd, so Jonkin will have happened, but we're taping before, so right now we don't know. So come on, what's your prediction? Or do you not do that? Is that like bad juju?
No, it's not bad to say you're going to win.
Okay.
No.
Good to speak in confidence. But for this year, it seemed to be competitive, you know. It's really hard to say because right now the scoring, you can get beat by 0.1.
Yeah, that's true.
So everything is unpredictable. Jonkin is a gamble when you reach out there.
Yeah.
You know, anything, things can fall apart, something could break down.
That's true. I know, I've seen things happen right before Bay Street, like an arm fall off or whatever.
Right, so until you pass the bright light, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's what I think I like about it, too. It keeps you in suspense and all, like, what's going to happen next?
Yeah. You know? Well, listen, I wish you guys all the best of luck. I've been watching Genesis since its first outing on Bay, and you know, it's always great to see new people in the pack and kind of continuing the tradition. So I don't know, do I say break a leg or do I say good luck?
You need it.
So, Carlos Bain, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight.
All right.
And to the audience, please come see Carlos's show as well. Even if Junkanoo's over, we still have Junkanoo at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas in Second to None, the show of fringe paintings by Carlos Bain. And Jay Coman, thank you so much for joining us as well.
Always my pleasure. Thank you.
Always a pleasure. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you've been listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Happy New Year to everyone. Thanks for listening, and have a good night.